You're listening to the Mom Inspired Show, Episode 3. Welcome to the Mom Inspired Show. I'm your host, Amber Sandberg, and this show is created to inspire, encourage, and add a little extra fun to your day. I'm excited to have Jess on the show today. We talk about her struggles with infertility and miscarriages and how this led her to write 2 books and start a blog and how she wanted her story to have a purpose. We also talk about how she didn't want women to feel alone and how God shows up differently for each person. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Let's go to the show. Jess, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's so fun to be here.
So I like to start off with an icebreaker. I love to travel. And so what is your favorite vacation spot with or without kids?
Okay. Well, gosh, that's a great question. I love to travel too. And my husband and I did some fun trips before we had kids. But now that we have kids, you know, we've done the beach and Disney World and those kind of fun things. Our favorite family spot that we love to go to is Kiawah Island, South Carolina. We have been there a couple of times, and I love that spot because it's really family friendly. There's at the beach, and it's kind of a wooded beach area, which my husband loves because he's more of a mountain guy than a beach guy. Lots of fun things to do for their family. So we love going there. We haven't done it every year. We try to do it every few years.
So how do you spell that?
Kiawah. It's K-I-A-W-A-H, and it is right off of Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, so it's more over there. So how do you drive there?
We drive. Yeah, and it's about 9 hours.
Oh, 9 hours.
9 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You guys must really like it to drive 9 hours.
It's not so bad, but I'm from South Florida. So you know, going down there is 16 hours. So nine feels true. Yeah.
So do you go to the Gulf and Destin or anything like that? Or do you always go to South Carolina?
We have gone to the Gulf and Destin. Actually, we're going to Alabama, Gulf Shores, next month.
I'm so jealous.
So we do. And I do love that beach. You know, being from South Florida, I never really knew about the Panhandle, you know, because always down there. So when I came up to Tennessee, I knew this is where everybody vacations and went there.
Oh my goodness, it's just
beautiful. The sand there, gorgeous. So we do that.
So what makes you go to South Carolina versus going to, you know, 30A and along the Panhandle and all that stuff? Because it's shorter drive. The sand is amazing. What makes you pull and go to the other one?
Honestly, it's a little less commercial. So it's a kind of a resort island, and it's so much more laid back. And not that I mind Destin and that whole fun scene, but this is a little more relaxing to me because there's not as many people.
Yes.
And it's not as commercial.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. You know, I just feel like we're from Michigan, so we didn't know about Destin area and all that stuff. And you know, everybody's like, oh, have you gone? Have you gone? And we've lived here for 10 years now, but, and we're like, no. And then when we went there, I thought to myself, why would anybody go to the Caribbean? I mean, this is amazing. The sand is so amazing. The water is so warm. And I just didn't have any idea that even going all the way down, I think to Clearwater, all that is still like that same kind of sand. And, I only knew the other side, the east, you know, the eastern side of Florida, and it's two totally different beaches, you know,
it is absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, that's good to know. I'll have to check that out. And where do you like to stay when you go there?
Well, the whole island is one big resort. We actually stay in a coworker, her family has a condo there. So we rent from them, which is the reason we even started going there. She told us about it and spoke so highly of it.
Nice.
So we stay in a condo, but the whole thing is a resort that's either like half privately owned and then half resort owned.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I definitely have to check that out. That sounds fun. But well, let's get into the show. How about you tell us who you are and how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely. Well, I am Jess Wolstenholm, and I am, let's see, mom to two. I have a daughter named Hope, who is 8, and a son named Joshua, who's 5. I'm married to an awesome man named Dave, and we live in the Nashville area. I am right now, I'm a freelance writer. I'm a blogger and an author. I got into writing because I used to work here in Nashville in the music industry. And then I kind of put what I learned in the music industry to work in the publishing industry, because we sort of have both arms here in the area. And once I started working in publishing, I realized how much I liked writing, and put that to use for some projects, and it just has continued to evolve. And I enjoy doing that because I get to stay home with my kids and do something fun and creative while they're at school.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is really exciting. And that kind of leads us into, you've written 2 books, right?
Yes.
Okay, so how about you tell the listeners what the books are about and what their titles are, and kind of go into a little bit of how that came to be.
Sure. Well, I wrote my first book. It's called The Pregnancy Companion. And then the second book was a follow-up, The Baby Companion. And these are books on, as you can probably tell, pregnancy and baby's first year.
Yeah.
I walked through a season of infertility and multiple miscarriages before both of my children. We lost 2 babies before my daughter Hope was born, and 2 before Joshua. And so when I was pregnant with Hope, I was experiencing lots of fear, as you can imagine, after loss, when you're pregnant after loss. And my OB was a good friend of mine. She went to my church. We were in small group together. And I said, hey, you know, I've been looking around, and there's not really any good resources out there for women, you know, who might be walking through pregnancy a little fearful. And you know, there's lots of pregnancy prayers book for Christian women, but there wasn't anything that was kind of the what to expect from a Christian perspective. And I said, hey, you want to write a book? And she was crazy enough to say yes.
That's awesome.
So we put that together. So she wrote all the medical, and then for The Baby Companion, we had a pediatrician who's a believer. She came on and wrote all of the medical for baby's first year. And then I just kind of came alongside and wrote some girlfriend to girlfriend, you know, advice and just inspirational, you know, devotions and things like that to help women along their journey.
I love that. And now, did you have issues before trying to get pregnant, like irregular cycles or anything that would make you think, oh, I might run into some trouble later on when I start trying?
I did. Yeah. All growing up, I was irregular and, you know, had lots of different things going on, but I didn't think much of it. I just thought, well, I'm young and my body hasn't figured this out yet. It wasn't until right before we started trying to have a baby that my doctor said, yeah, I think you're going to struggle. She was really vague about it. She just said, you're going to struggle, but we've got drugs for that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, okay, well, what does that mean? Yeah. And that's when I met my doctor and friend and asked her for a little more insight. And she was just so caring and careful and compassionate that I thought, well, I need to be under the care of this woman. So that was a godsend for me.
Yeah. And now I can't remember. Do you have a condition or something?
I do. I have, and I didn't know this. My first doctor never told me this. It wasn't until I was under my new doctor, but I have polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yes.
Which it sounds like something that it isn't. It's basically a fancy way of saying a hormone imbalance. So there's, you know, different hormones in the body that aren't regulated, and I'm not a medical professional, so I don't want to get into it too
much.
Yeah,
this is just your story, yes.
Right. My story is that I wasn't ovulating, and so I wasn't able to conceive on my own without medical help.
Right. So now when you had the miscarriages, were you taking the medicine to help you get pregnant? Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. The first time I got pregnant on my own, I had seen a natural, you know, doctor, and I took some supplements and that sort of thing. We got pregnant on our own, but we miscarried. pretty early. It was around 8 weeks, but we had seen a heartbeat and all of that. So we were very hopeful.
Yes.
But it was not a viable pregnancy. And then the next miscarriage, I had taken fertility drugs, and we were at 12 weeks when we went in realized there's no heartbeat anymore. So that was, you know,
That's a hard one. I mean, I feel like, especially if people have miscarried, and even not, I feel like the 12 week mark, you really kind of hold your breath, you know, you're just waiting. Yeah. And, I mean, and I've talked to, other people about miscarriages, and they say too, that when people have had them early, and I've had one early, I think probably at 5 weeks, and that people kind of dismiss it like, oh, well, it's only because I don't know if they feel like, well, it's not as bad as the 12 week or, you know, or after that. And, but it's all still so hard. And I feel like a lot of people still kind of just don't talk about it as much. And, I'm not sure why, but, because so many people experience it. So, it brings me to the next question to, what made you decide to go public with your fertility journey? And then, and how long did it take you to feel brave enough before you thought, I want to share this with people?
Yeah. You know, I'm a pretty transparent person. So I kind of live my life as an open book anyway. You know, a lot of people ask, well, how, you know, when is it safe to tell people you're pregnant? Well, that is a very personal question. Yes. If you're more private, then you might want, you know, you probably will wait. I'm not a very private person. What you see is what you get. So everybody was pretty, you know, our close friends and family were pretty aware of our journey. And for me, writing and blogging about it in the beginning was helpful for me to, one, you know, kind of get my feelings down and get it out there. And two, to really feel like I wasn't alone, because as soon as somebody says, oh, me too, yeah, I went through that as well, you feel like, okay, so I'm not just the reject with the broken body, you know, because that's what a lot of women feel when they are struggling with infertility or loss. You feel like, well, why, what's wrong with me? Why won't this work for me? God made our bodies to do this, and mine just is broken. And so I wanted women to feel like they weren't alone. And I wanted to feel like my story had purpose.
Yeah.
So if I could, you know, connect with other women and help them, or encourage them, or even if we could encourage each other, then it was, you know, it wasn't without purpose.
Yeah, I totally understand that, because when we were trying for my first daughter, it took 2.5 years, which feels like a lifetime when you're trying month after month. And, you know, you start your period and it's just a letdown of this didn't happen. And for me, it kind of, I had a battle with feeling less than, especially as a woman, because you think God created us to have children, and that's our, like our body versus a man was made to have children. And so to not get pregnant, you really battle with that issue of my body's failing me. I can't even do the job that I'm supposed to do. The main job that I'm supposed to do, I can't even do. And I then feel like that just makes you feel so isolated, because you can't work harder at it. You know, you can't go and
you can't fix it.
Right. You can't fix it. You can't make yourself just put in extra hours and just do, you just can't, where a lot of things in life, you can go, you can work harder, you can put more time in, you can, you know, study harder, and you get the results that you want. This is an area that you cannot do that in. And I feel like it just makes you feel very helpless, and it can take away hope, and you just don't really know if it's ever going to come. And 'cause here's the thing, I think if people knew, hey, you're not going to get pregnant in this amount of time, but you will get pregnant in 5 years, I think that would actually help people, even if they didn't want to take 5 years, but just to know, like, okay, like it's going to happen. Yeah. 'Cause I think the biggest part, especially when you're trying for your first child, are you ever going to have children? And so I definitely know how that feels. And, I think that's where it's great that you wrote a book. And, 'cause I think a lot of women do feel alone. And that kind of leads me to my next question. When you were struggling with fertility, did you have anyone in your life that was having a hard time too? Or did you feel alone, like you were the only person?
I did have other people in my life. Several of my friends were getting pregnant without trying. So that was hard, you know, but I had some other friends, and actually my best friend today, we were acquaintances before we both walked through infertility around the same time. And our stories are very different. And God showed up in different ways, but we did both get pregnant, and wow. I have two children and she has three children.
Oh,
and
wow.
Now we just are the best of friends, and we have that history.
Yes.
So I did have several women walking through the same thing.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel alone. I felt like, okay, I'm not the only one. I'm not, you know, just the loser who can't make her body work. Because you're right. I realized what a control freak I was.
Yeah.
During that time, because I wanted so badly to make it happen, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
I had to really let go.
Oh yeah, yeah. And for me, oh my goodness, I had maybe one person that I think was struggling. And everyone else, so I'm not kidding, my street, my Bible study, the people at work, everyone was having kids. And it was insane. I mean, I literally could not go anywhere. And it just was really hard. And it was just in my face. People were starting to lap me with their second pregnancies. And so, it was really hard. And then a lot of my close friends at the time, were not even married. So I couldn't even go to them to say, this is what's going on, because, you know, it's hard to explain that to somebody, you know, they're wanting to get married. And then you're like, oh, I can't get pregnant. And, you know, it's just really hard to, it's hard for anybody to understand, even if you're married, if you don't have, that experience of fertility issues. And for me, what's crazy is, I didn't even know what was wrong. Like, I didn't even have irregular cycles. Like, that's the kicker.
Hardest part.
It's like, I had regular cycles, and now they didn't now. And I'll go into this. I mean, so many people now have what they call unexplained fertility, which I don't know, that would just drive, I think, somebody crazy.
Absolutely.
You would rather actually have a problem.
The not knowing, again, because we want to fix it. So at least I knew, this is what's wrong. Here's how you fix it. We hope that it works, you know. Yeah. But when you have an explained infertility, it's maddening, because you can't do anything about it.
Right. Right. And you don't even know. And so for me, I think my thyroid was slightly off. And so I kind of had to fix that. And then I ended up having a polyp in my cervix. And I'm sure everyone's like, oh, this is awesome to hear. No. So sorry, listeners, for having to hear this, but we're talking about fertility.
Hey, getting real.
We're getting real. And so, but she was like, oh, this is pretty much like a goalie and the hockey puck is not getting through. I mean, literally, that's what she said. And I was like, wow. But even removing that, it still took 7 months. And so that's where I think my thyroid had to kind of be adjusted, and my progesterone. I feel like my progesterone kind of goes on the low side. And so I went to acupuncturist, and I still see her today. And I think she really just kind of helped my body get to where it needed to be. But it was maddening, because, and the thing is, for me, they kept wanting to put me on Clomid, which is that what you ended up taking?
That's what I took. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and that worked for you. I mean, I know you had miscarriages, but is that what worked for you to have the pregnancies? Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what they do give people, I feel, that have PCOS. But for me, they kept wanting to give me that, which I'm just like, I'm not having issues with my ovulation, so I don't know why this would work.
Right.
And so
they're just trying everything.
Yeah. And I feel like that's their first, I think, attack at things is Clomid. And,
and it's not for everybody.
It isn't. That's,
it's for everybody. Yeah.
Right. And for me, I just didn't feel peace about it, because I didn't feel like that was going to solve my problem. I feel like progesterone was my problem. And so, but then with my second pregnancy, okay, well, I miscarried after my first daughter, but I got pregnant really fast. And then I got pregnant really fast on my second daughter. So it doesn't make any sense. Like, some things just don't make any sense.
It's amazing any of us are walking on this earth at all. That's what I always say. I'm like, how do we have so many people alive and breathing?
Yes.
So much can go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
it's a miracle, really. It really is.
Exactly. And so, I mean, so that's kind of just where, for me, it's kind of crazy, like my story, because I can't tell you really why I couldn't get pregnant and then why I got pregnant. I mean, because I didn't really, you know, what's weird to me is like, I was younger when I first started trying. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, I was younger, I was more in shape, and I didn't get pregnant. So it doesn't even make sense. Like, I mean, logically, that doesn't even make sense. So, so it is maddening for people, because I think they just can't, it's something that you can't figure out. And time just keeps going by, which then makes things really difficult. And so I wanted to circle back. You wrote the two books. And then did you mention that you started a blog? Have we touched base on that?
I haven't talked about it yet. Okay. I did mention that I do blog.
Okay. Why don't you tell everybody about that?
So after I wrote the books, I started blogging, and well, I blogged through my journey, but that was kind of more personal. And so I went a little more public with my blog, and my friend that I told you about that was also experiencing infertility and then had her miracle babies. We, once we became moms, you know, we felt all that pressure to do it a certain way. And after all we had been through, I think we were a little weary, and we were really tired of people telling us how to do things. So we started a blog called Grace for Moms. And it was built on the premise that, you know, we are all uniquely made. All of our children are uniquely made. We as moms are all uniquely made. And motherhood is not one size fits all. And so we wanted to encourage moms that, hey, you know, if you are a Christian and you are walking with God and you pray and you, you know, listen for his guidance, then he can show you and guide you in what's right for your family. Instead of reading every parenting book out there that tells you there's only one way to do it. I have nothing against parenting books. I think they're very helpful. I just think we have to, you know, kind of take things with a grain of salt, and all the blog posts that we read and all the advice that we read, we have to kind of take it with a grain of salt and say, okay, well, that has some good advice, but that's not the, you know, be all end all. And I have to really determine what's best for my family. So it kind of takes the pressure off to do things a certain way. And that's what we're about in that community. So I've been writing there, and we have a team of writers there. We have lots of moms that write there because we want to kind of express that, you know, there's so many different perspectives out there. And we've been doing that for about 4 years now.
Wow. That is really cool. And what do you feel like people tend to want to hear about the most with the blog?
Well, our pregnancy posts are very popular. Mm. I think a lot of women, I think they find us that way because they're Googling things.
Yeah.
My doctor that co-wrote the books with me, she blogs there. And so she'll answer all kinds of questions, like silly things I just ate lunch meat. Is my baby going to be okay? You know, things
like
that.
And what does she say about that? Because I didn't eat lunch meat and I always wanted lunch meat. What does she say? Do you know?
She's a no-nonsense doctor. She is not like super, you know, strict about things. And so she said, look, if the lunch meat's been sitting out all afternoon, you probably don't want to eat it. But if the lunch meat is new and it's in the fridge and it's fresh, it's fine. You know, it's fine.
That's
the whole reason that they don't want you to eat lunch meat is because of the risk of listeria.
Yes.
And listeria only happens when it goes bad. So, you know, and that's the approach we took in the books, because you look at, you know, those other pregnancy books and they freak you out about everything.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, if you're having cramps, you might be having a miscarriage. I mean, that's what it always told you.
Oh my goodness.
But before ever saying that, you know, we kind of say, hey, you know, it's probably nothing, and just, you know, calm down. And so that's our approach to that. So our pregnancy posts are pretty popular. And then I think, you know, a lot of moms really enjoy just, you know, reading about different mom stories and kind of different ways to do things. And just feeling like, hey, I'm not alone if I feel, you know, guilt because I'm a working mom, or I'm not alone because I don't do Pinterest crafts at my house.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that.
Right.
So we try to make everybody feel like they have a place at the table, so they're not alone.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I do feel like, and that's the whole reason why I wanted to start the podcast, is because I feel like so many people see the strengths of everyone else and then they think I'm not good at that, but they're not looking at what that person isn't good at. And, right. and that you may be good at what they're not good at, but you're only seeing what they can do really well.
Right.
And you know, cause there's so many people that can do things so well. And then you really kind of walk away going, oh my goodness, I'm not even doing this with my kids right. or whatever. And then you're just like, this feels like so much work and I don't even know. And so, I do feel like that is an issue, and I feel like we're feeling it so much more today because of social media
yes.
and Pinterest and Instagram and Facebook, as great as those are, but you're seeing so much more than you ever would have seen before, like in magazines. You would have had to go get the magazines, look right. at all the articles
oh, yeah.
versus now you can scan so fast and yep. just take in so much information and then kind of feel like you're a loser walking away from that. And so I do think that's really great that you have that blog to kind of, you know, balance out all the other stuff yeah. that we're talking about. And,
yeah, that, and that's our heart. I mean, I'm going to be 40 in a couple months. Okay. Well, next month, wait, November. Okay. So not too long.
Yeah, we'll
I'm
going to
be 40
yeah,
very
be a couple.
Soon.
Yeah. yeah.
And so I'm just, you know, I'm at that point in my life where I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to own it. I don't need to pretend
I know.
That I'm something that I'm not. I'm just going to own who I am. I
yes.
am not, I'm not crafty. We don't yeah. do all kinds of activities in my house. I have yeah. a no paint policy in my house. well, right now we're painting because my daughter's working on a third grade project that's due tomorrow, but
oh my
and it requires paint. But
yes.
other than that,
you
we have
paint.
A no paint policy in this house. We don't do all those cute crafts
yeah.
because that's not me. That brings yeah. my anxiety to like
yes.
new levels.
Yes.
So we don't do that, but we do other things. And so, you know, just owning who we are and how we're made. And sometimes we have to step out of our comfort zone, but for the most part, I think we can be who God made us to be. And that's who our kids need us to be. And more than that, they need to see us being who we are so that they can walk confidently in who God made them to be. Cause if
yeah.
they see us always trying to strive, then they're going to grow up striving and
oh, right. Yeah.
never really own who they are either.
Yeah. So speaking of doing things that you feel you're good at, what is one thing that you really enjoy and you feel like you're good at?
You know, for me, one of the big priorities in our house is just open conversation and talking, especially about, you know, things of faith. And that's because that's what my parents did. They also weren't, you know, good at crafts
yeah.
and that sort of thing. One thing that I remember growing up is there was no question off limits. We could always ask anything. And, you know, there was always open dialogue. My parents didn't talk at us. They talked with us. And so, that's something that I take pride in and that we do here in our home is just, you know, talk about things. I love to have conversation with my kids about God or encourage them to ask questions. We do that, you know, at the dinner table at night or before bed, a lot of times in the car. I try to keep those communication lines open.
Do you feel like they are open to talking? Like, do you feel like you have kids that are more extroverted, or are they introverted and willing to kind of open up, or do you kind of feel like you're pulling information?
Good question. I have one of each.
Okay.
And even the extrovert, my
yeah.
little one is
yeah.
very extroverted.
Yeah.
I had his first parent teacher conference. He's in kindergarten and
yeah.
his teacher told me yesterday, he has a big personality. And I said, yes, he does. But even he is not, because they're kids and they're like, what
yes.
are you talking about, Mom?
Yes.
But I am a firm believer that you start as you mean to go on, you know? So if you want your teenagers to be open to conversation, then you start when they're young, even if they don't get it yet. And so my son, he's a little more open to talking. My daughter, she's gotten into it more, but she's definitely not as extroverted as he is. I have to pull things out of her. But the
yes.
more that she's in third grade, you know, in kindergarten, I ask her the same questions that I asked her every day after school in kindergarten. And now she's so much more open to giving me details.
Oh
even
my goodness. Yes. I'm in that same boat right now. With
where they don't stop talking, you know, So yeah, I think every child's different.
Yes.
So if that's a value of yours in your home, you know, to have open lines of communication, you just kind of establish that culture and you pray that they come alongside as they grow. Sure.
Yes. I haven't. So my daughter who's in kindergarten, she's my oldest and she is introverted and so am I. But I've had to learn to become more outgoing, extroverted. And so I can see that she hasn't learned that skill yet. Right. I mean, she's only five. And so I get a lot of, school is fine. And then I'm like dragging it out. And she's almost kind of like looking at me like, Mom, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And so that's why I was just curious about that with you. And I can tell sometimes I feel kind of like, you know what, just leave her alone. But on the flip side, I'm like, okay, but you could keep doing that and time can keep going. And then, you know, you blink and then you think, oh my gosh, a year's gone by. So you do have to be careful with how much you push and then how much you kind of keep persistence,
right?
Of doing it, you know, and not letting up without being annoying, you know, because if you get annoying, then they're really just kind of
then
like,
they're going to just shut down.
Yes. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's definitely a balance. I spent some time this weekend with a friend who I consider a mentor because she is a couple years older than me on this parenting journey. She has a teenage daughter.
Yeah.
And I asked her, she said, gosh, my relationship with, you know, her relationship with her daughter is really good.
Oh, wow.
And they're so open and there's a lot of trust. And I said, okay, awesome. What's the secret? Like, how'd you get there?
Yeah, I want to hear this.
And she said, you know, being really involved in her friends' lives was really important because as teenagers, their friends are the most important thing, especially for girls.
Right.
And so, and these are kids she grew up with. So she did have the privilege of kind of growing up with them. But the mom said, you know, the more I'm in their life and the more I'm taking an interest in her friends. And so there's a trust built there. So now she's willing to talk to me about her friends. And, you know, one of the questions I ask my kids every day is, who did you sit with at lunch today? And it sounds so silly. I actually ask that question first because I want to know, who are you connecting with? If the pattern changes, then I want to know, is there something wrong? You know, is there any drama going on and that sort of thing? And she said that to me. She said, oh yeah, I always asked her like, who did you sit with at lunch? And I was like, yes, that's what I ask. Okay. I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
And
that's great.
Because she's just, you know, keeping tabs on who she's connecting with. And like I said, if that changes or if something's going on, maybe it would prompt discussion because their relationships are so important. And we want to, you know, take an interest in that and build trust there so that later on they will come to us when something's going on.
I like that.
So that was really good advice. Yeah.
I like that. And, you know, I was asking my daughter that, who is she playing with on recess? And, because at the beginning it was really rough. There's just so many kids and she's introverted, right? So you have all these kids on recess and then you now need to go start talking to these people. And that's really intimidating, especially for an introvert. And so at first she was having a hard time and then now, you know, she's finally doing better. And, but I do like that. I do like the idea of asking who they're sitting with at lunch, who are they playing with? And I like that, your mentor friend was saying that she's involved in the friend's life. And do you think that means she's always kind of asking questions about the friends, like being interested in her friends. Is that what you feel like she was meaning?
It is. But even like she went as far as to say she kind of, you know, interacts one-on-one with them. So like when she's with the daughter and the friends, you know, she'll have conversations directly with the friends because then that helps the friend
feel comfortable.
Trust her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I think that is very important and something, you know, just good to know. And I do think, you know, I know when I look back, I was kind of close to my best friend's mom, and I think that made a difference. And I think that's a good thing to just kind of keep in your mind to do as your kids get older, is just to really know their friends. So that's a really good advice to take away. So we're almost at the end of the show. So I have one last question, and it's, what would you tell a woman that is listening and is suffering from fertility, even if it's secondary fertility or miscarriages?
Oh, I would tell her to not lose hope. I think, you know, like we said, it can be so maddening to walk through, and whether you know or don't know what's going on, it's maddening. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes.
But I just remember saying out loud so many times, God, I don't get you. I don't understand what you're doing, but I trust you. And so trusting him with my story, and I would encourage a woman to trust him with her story. It's so much easier for me to say that on the other side. And I acknowledge that. And I admit that there is really nothing you can say to a woman in the midst of that madness that's really going to take the pain away, except to say, I understand. And it stinks. And I'm so sorry that you're walking through this, but don't lose hope. Because God can do anything. My son's conception story is an absolute miracle. It baffled the doctors. He should not have been conceived, but it happened. And so I know God can do anything. And we just need to keep believing.
Now, he was your first, right?
He was my second.
Oh, he's your second. And yeah. They're saying that that was a miracle?
Yes.
Oh, do you want to share that?
I will share that story if we have the
sure,
time.
Yes, we do. Yeah, I think people would love to hear that.
Okay. So, you know, my daughter was born, when I first went to the fertility clinic and I did Clomid. I had done Clomid with my OB, but being on Clomid wasn't enough. I needed close monitoring. And I also needed an HCG shot.
Okay.
So that kind of, you know, strengthened the egg as it was being released and all that. Again, I'm not a medical professional,
but
pretty much how it worked. And then I had a great pregnancy and delivery with her. When we went to have my son, we thought, well, that wasn't as hard as we thought. So let's just do Clomid again with my OB. You know, let's just do that. Maybe we don't need this monitoring. And so we did Clomid in the first month we got pregnant, but I miscarried right away. So I found out I was pregnant one day. The next day I started bleeding.
Oh my goodness.
So it was, another loss, and it was sad. But I think at that point I was very numb to all of it. And, you know, you're kind of like, well, here we are again.
Mm.
And then I kind of moved forward and grieved through that. And then about 4 weeks later, I passed out one night. We were watching an award show. I don't remember which. Had to go to the ER and discovered that I had an ectopic pregnancy and my tube had burst. So it was twins. I was pregnant with twins.
Wow.
The first one miscarried. The second one was ectopic.
Oh. Wow.
So I lost my tube, which made things even worse.
Wow.
But my doctor saved my life and I was okay, in the hospital for a couple of days. After I healed from that, we said, well, learned our lesson. We should go back to the fertility clinic and have the monitoring and have the extra care. So we did that and we did Clomid for another 6 months, and you can only do it for so many months at
right.
a time.
Yes.
And they make you stop.
I think it's six times, I think, six
I think
rounds.
It's six.
Yeah.
And so the last round, I went in and I had no eggs, you know, cause each month they go to see like how many eggs are you producing?
Wow.
And I had none. And I, was so devastated and just thought, well, God, am I, done? Is this it? Am I supposed to adopt? What are we doing? And, you know, you walk out of the fertility clinic, if you've ever been on that road and you write that massive check and you know, it didn't work and you just, are just undone. Hmm. But the doctor caught me on my way out the door and he said, listen, I'm starting this new protocol. Let's try it on you. I'm going to give you another round of Clomid now. You're going to take it now. You're not even going to wait. You can take it on top of this and let's see if it kind of stimulates you. And so I did that. And I went back in a couple weeks later and I had two big, beautiful eggs, but they were on the side with no tube.
Oh.
And he said, go home. You're not getting pregnant this month.
Mm.
And I had dinner with some friends that night and they said, I was crying and telling them, I can't do this anymore. And you know how it goes. And, I said, I just don't know what to do. And my friend looked at me and said, I just really feel like you were going to get pregnant this month. And I just still believe that. And I was like, well, it's not even possible. It's not medically possible. And so I said, okay. And I was so done that I just decided I was going to dare God. I said, okay, fine. I dare you, God. I dare you to make this all about you and, nothing that I did. I dare you to do it when it's impossible. And so, I really felt a lot of hope that month. And 2 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant with my son.
Oh my gosh. Wait, so you didn't have the tube on that
I didn't have
side,
a tube.
Right?
I didn't have a tube.
So the egg has to travel
somehow,
through the tube,
it got there.
Right?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Somehow wow. I got there. And so when I called the fertility clinic and I said, well, I'm pregnant. And they said, you're what? And they wow. were baffled. But wow. Like I said, I knew, you know, I knew God could do anything. And so that's what I would say to women. I mean, your story will probably be very differently, you know, yeah. very different than that. But I yeah. do, I believe in miracles. I believe every life is a miracle, no matter what. And, you know, we just have to trust that God can do what he's going to do for us.
Wow. That's really inspiring and crazy all at the same time. I mean,
yeah.
So let me just go back really quick. So when you miscarried, you found out you were pregnant, you miscarried, that was the set of twins. Is that what you were saying? Or was that two separate miscarriages?
It was, so I conceived twins and I miscarried the first one. And right. the second one was growing in my tube that whole time.
I
so
see.
That 4 week time.
Oh yes.
And then, mm-hmm.
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, crazy. So is that kind of what happens? Like people do pass out, or is that just one symptom that you could have if you have that kind of pregnancy?
With ectopic, well, yeah. I passed out because my tube burst and I was bleeding internally.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Wow. Oh
so
my
normally
gosh.
You'll just feel, you know, just, it was like a weird crampy, like indigestion, like what's going on in my stomach kind of feeling for a couple of days. And I just thought I was, you know, not feeling good.
Wow.
And then usually they always say that you have shoulder pain with, like pain in your shoulder. Oh, when you have an ectopic, and that's because if you're bleeding internally, it kind of radiates pain.
I see.
In
okay.
Yeah.
Now, did you say what that doctor gave you? So he gave you the Clomid, but what was the other thing that he wanted to try on you?
So at the fertility clinic, yeah. we did Clomid, and then the two successful pregnancies that I had, I took an HCG shot. So HCG is, I'm not even going to try to say what that stands for,
right?
But it's the hormone that your body releases when you're pregnant. So when you go in and have your pregnancy, like when you're first pregnant and you have your hormone levels checked,
yes,
that's mm-hmm. the HCG hormone
yes.
that rises,
right?
As,
okay.
you know,
yeah.
And so my body needed a boost of that in okay. order to kind of, again, not a medical professional,
yeah,
but my understanding
yeah.
was in order for that egg to,
sure.
you know, be strong when
sure.
it released.
Now, and then when you were leaving, when the doctor, then when they were saying, okay, you have no eggs. And then the mm-hmm. doctor said, no. Okay. I'm going to give you this Clomid. Take it right now. What was different? What made him think this is going to work this time? Was something different?
Yeah, no, it's called a step up protocol. So I had already done Clomid, and normally you'd do Clomid and then you'd wait another whole other month to start another round.
Right.
So I started another round of Clomid mid month.
Oh.
So like wow. right around the time I would normally have been ovulating. So if, you know, if you start Clomid and then you ovulate 2 weeks later, kind of in the middle of your cycle.
Yeah.
I started another round of Clomid in the middle of my cycle to see if it would basically overstimulate my ovaries. And it did. Yeah.
And that's called a step up protocol?
They called it a step up protocol. I don't even know if they're still doing it. This was 6 years ago.
Okay. But it's just something, cause I'm sure when people are listening, you know, they may want to just Google that or call or ask. Yeah. You know, cause maybe they're at that point where it's like, okay, I just need that next thing or something. So I just wanted to kind of specify that. So if they wanted to look it up, they could. So, well, we are at the end of the show, but I do want people to be able to find you. So where can people look for you on social media?
Yeah, I'd love to connect with them. So I am, the blog is graceformoms.com. And then I am on, we're on Facebook. We have a great Facebook page community. So that's Facebook /Grace for Moms. And then I am on Instagram as myself, Jess Wolstenholm, or as at Grace for Moms. And then also on Twitter. I'm mostly on Twitter at Grace for Moms.
Okay. And you were saying you have a Facebook page that's Grace for Moms, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Jess, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It was so fun to chat with you about all of this.
And there you have it. Thank you for listening to the Mom Inspired Show. Again, I'm your host, Amber Sandberg. Please don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Thanks, guys. See you next week.